Welcome back to Current State here on 90.5 WKAR, Wednesday, November 9th. The world keeps spinning. The planets keep circling around the sun. And Donald Trump will become America's next president. Lansing area residents are responding to last night's election results, even though not all the results are necessarily in. We'll clarify that in just a minute or two. Early this morning, Current State's Kevin Lavery went to Frandor to get some response.
My name is Jamal Davis, and I'm from Chicago. And I just want to say is I do not like the vote, the president election, because I feel that Trump is not for us. I feel that Hillary should have won.
You're from Chicago. Illinois was one of the very few blue states in the Midwest.
I know, right? I'm kind of happy though, but I'm not because Trump won.
And what's your name?
Angie.
Thoughts on what happened last night?
I think whatever way it would have went, I probably would have woken up and cried.
Either way. What makes you say that?
Well, I think that these days the two-party system in America kind of wraps us into feeling like we need to vote for one or the other, and both of the candidates are very flawed. But I think we all felt like we were kind of wrapped into having to vote for one or the other in order to stop the one we didn't like.
I'm Tory, man. Childress.
How I feel about it, man, I feel like a lot of people are naive, man. I feel like a lot of people need to wake up and realize what's going on. Honestly, I'm not really for Hillary or Donald Trump. I feel like none of them would have been great presidents for us, but man, I think that stuff's just gonna get worse. And a lot of people don't know what they did. They put a man that is a joke in office, man. He's a joke. You can't take him serious. Nothing that comes out that man's mouth is serious. He can't even answer a proper question, man. You know what I mean? The proper way. So that's how I feel about him. I just think stuff's gonna get real from here. You know what I mean? And this man don't know how to talk to people.
First name's James Newton. I woke up at 2 o'clock this morning and turned on the TV to find out that there has to be a God if Trump won. Thank you.
Well, what some observers called a Republican wave not only catapulted Donald J. Trump to the White House, but returned GOP incumbents, but some Democratic incumbents as well, back to Congress and to the Michigan State House. What does it all add up to? We'll try to penetrate the fog of the morning after with MERS News, Kyle Malin, and Inside Michigan Politics, Susan J. Demas. Thank you very much for being here after a long, long night.
Yeah, thanks for inviting us.
Thanks, Mark.
Hillary, let's try to clear up a couple of details here. Hillary Clinton has conceded, but there are some extraordinary dynamics still in play. For example, CNN has still not called Michigan for Trump. It's apparently tight. Still, Clinton has conceded. Any thoughts on that landscape?
Yeah, and I'll take a stab at that because I spent the last hour or so looking at the precincts that the AP still had outstanding in Wayne County, in Washtenaw County, in Monroe County, and there are a couple other odds and ends out there. Donald Trump will win Michigan. It's just the margin, and it's going to be a tight margin. We're talking around 10,000, probably less votes. If he gets below 7,000, it will probably be the tightest election in Michigan history, going back to 1840. But we don't know that yet. There's seven precincts left in Genesee County, maybe a stray like smattering of stuff in Wayne County and some outstate rural counties, but certainly not enough to give Hillary this state.
We are still digesting reports, Susan, that Hillary Clinton will win the popular vote.
She will.
But that Donald Trump nonetheless clears 270 electoral votes and becomes the next president. It's a lot to unravel. It's an even weirder scenario than at 2 a.m. this morning. Is the country in store for a feverish debate about the Electoral College?
Perhaps. I mean, I remember the last one in 2000 with Bush v. Gore. We didn't see any change then. But Hillary Clinton is probably going to put up a decent lead with the popular vote because, you know, as we know, the California vote comes in rather slowly. And on election night, we thought that President Obama's margin in 12 was far smaller than it really turned out to be.
Kyle, expecting an electoral college debate in our near future?
Yeah, but you know, the change to the Electoral College process is something that is a fire in the flash pan. I just don't see it like sparking anything beyond people grumbling for a month or two. Like Susan said, in 2000, Al Gore lost and we got over it. I mean, this is a debate that needs to happen. Electoral College, really, if you get down to it, is pretty stupid. But there's got to be a political will to do something about it. And there probably isn't going to be a lot of political will in Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania. Those states actually made the election here. In Michigan, we tried it. Folks who tried to get rid of the Electoral College here or run out on a rail, we kind of like it because it preserves some power in Michigan, makes us a lot more powerful than other states.
It's amazing to consider how recently Republicans were wringing their hands over a Trump effect on down-ticket candidates. It seemed to turn out the opposite. Were Michigan Republicans riding on Donald Trump's coattails?
Oh, they certainly were. I mean, what we saw is that basically the dynamics in the state house, which, you know, was the primary thing to watch down ballot here, it stays at the 63-seat level, which is a real high point for them. Actually, a Democratic incumbent down in Monroe, Bill Lavoie, lost a seat, but that was made up by Darren Camilleri, who won an open seat downriver in Wayne County. So that has huge implications for Republicans and certainly must be making Democrats feel rather antsy about 2018 when the governor's mansion will be open. All the statewide offices, most of the Senate, and, you know, another third of the House. That was a year that Democrats were really hoping that they could make some headway. And, of course, you know, that's in the run-up to the redistricting process that we'll all be happily going through in 2021.
We will take another look at 2018 here and what last night's results mean for 2018 here in Michigan in just a minute. I'm talking with Susan J. Demas of Inside Michigan Politics and MERS News' Kyle Malin about Michigan the morning after the general election. One big takeaway with our coverage last night here on WKAR, this was with Tom Shields and Dennis Denno. It's undeniably big that the Republicans retake the White House, and it's not just the other party. It's the other party under a guy who's never held elective office and with all of the controversial baggage that Donald Trump has. But you run down the list of Michigan congressional districts, what names do you see? Bishop, Wahlberg, Amash, Molinar, Huizenga, and Kildee, Conyers, and Levin. For all that's about to change at the White House, what has changed among the Michigan congressional delegation, Kyle? It appears not much.
Well, on a party level, no, nothing changed at all. It's still going to be 9-5 Republicans as it was yesterday. The only difference is that we do have two new members that will be joining. Jack Bergman in the 1st Congressional District will succeed Dan Benishek, who decided not to run again. And we've got Paul Mitchell is going to be the new congressman out of the 10th Congressional District to succeed Candace Miller, who opted not to run again. Instead, won a convincing victory for Macomb County Public Works Commissioner, joining other Republicans I just found out who also won in Macomb County last night.
What do you make of the Bergman win, Susan?
Well, that race was looking very close, but in the end, Donald Trump was just a huge boon to him, as well as Republican candidates for the state house. The Democrats were looking at three seats up there, and their hopes were just completely dashed because Donald Trump's numbers were very impressive in those rural areas. If you look at northern Michigan, it's just a sea of red. There's couple specks of blue, but, you know, it looks very similar to the 2010 map when, you know, it was another Republican landslide year.
Let's turn our focus to the Michigan State House and try to unpack what happened among 110 or so state house races. The GOP retains control. Again, not much seems to have changed. What do you see, Kyle?
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, I think as Susan just said, I mean, we had two changes of note. We had one Democratic incumbent lose in the Monroe area, and we had Darren Camilleri win in the Downriver area. So it was a flop. The Republicans took one. The Democrats lost, gained one. And so we still have a 63-47 majority. All the vulnerable incumbents that were up that everyone was worried about Brant Iden or Holly Hughes or Tom Barrett, John Bison, they all won. And then on the Republican side, in these open districts that we thought, well, maybe the Democrats will win some, Republicans will win some, and the Democrats will gain five seats when it all comes out in the wash. Well, they didn't gain anything. Instead, we saw Republicans up and down the ballot. Macomb County up north, just the power of Donald Trump in those areas really drove home the nail for the Republicans.
The 71st district was expected to be close. It was really tight 2 years ago, not maybe as tight as we expected. The Lansing State Journal reporting today that Tom Barrett wins with, unofficially here, 54% of the vote. Any thoughts on that, Susan?
Yeah, this is a 50-50 district outside of Lansing, and Tom Barrett proved that he is the candidate that Republicans said he was. He's very good on the doors. He was good at raising money. Teresa Abed turned out to be not as good of a candidate as people had hoped. She had a record to run on, which was used against her. She's just not as personable as Tom Barrett is. So, you know, he benefited from, I think, Trump not being the albatross that people were counting on in this district, and the fact that, you know, he worked. I think probably more surprising is out in Battle Creek, where you had John Bison, who's a physician, a moderate Republican, very good candidate, facing a lawyer and county commissioner, Jim Hodzma, who, you know, had raised a lot of money, had former Congressman Mark Schauer in his corner. Nobody knows the district like Mark. I think where things went south for Jim Hodzma was missing African-American voters again, even though that district is 56% Democratic. So, I mean, the Democrats could not have hit worse luck. But then again, we were saying this in 2014, too. There were a lot of very close races. And all of those close races, all of those contested races broke towards the Republicans. So there's a real issue here.
Battle Creek likes its physicians. We call it the Joe effect here.
I think the more significant thing here is that these districts were drawn for Republicans. And when the race is 50-50 like it was today, I mean, you're just not going to get any closer of a top-of-the-ticket race 50-50 here. They're going to go for the Republicans. You know, you look up in the Upper Peninsula, for example, that's drawn for Republicans. These districts up north, drawn for Republicans. The Battle Creek one is a bit of an anomaly because that does have a Democratic base. And if anybody should have lost, it should have been John Bison. But even he survived, you know, any kind of Democratic onslaught. And I guess it just goes to show you that all things being equal, these districts held and Republicans got the districts that they drew back in 2011. And they're going to have majority again because of it.
Kyle Malin of MERS News, Susan J. Demas of Inside Michigan Politics on Current State. On 90.5 WKAR, here is Tom Barrett talking to WKAR's Kevin Lavery late last night in Delta Township. Tom Barrett comments about how he won.
You had a pretty healthy lead most of the night, but a lot of that was from the rural part of Eaton County. You were concerned about taking places like Grand Ledge and Delta Township. Grand Ledge was a place that you had lost 2 years ago.
Yes, and it looks like we've won Grand Ledge this year. I'm certainly proud of that accomplishment. And I think it shows that people have become more comfortable with me. You know, I had never held political office before I was elected 2 years ago, so I think I have a track record of success now, and I think that showed in the results that we saw tonight.
So does this tell you that you have a clear mandate from the people of the 71st as to what to do?
I certainly hope so. I certainly hope so.
And here he is again talking about his agenda in term number two.
Well, it's what I talked about during my campaign, continuing to work on veteran issues, continuing to balance our state budget, continuing to bring more and better jobs to Michigan, and trying to work on our auto no-fault insurance rates in our state that are the highest in the country.
Closer to Lansing, the status remains quo, as they say. Shore, Cochran, Singh, Tom Leonard all return to office. Is Brandon Dillon in the Michigan Democratic Party, I'm hearing you suggest that they are pretty much right back where they started, looking for leverage somewhere?
In terms of legislation or?
Just in terms of an electoral lift. an electoral, some kind of electoral advantage somewhere.
Well, they've got to go all in for 2018. What they really need to do is win the governor's mansion. And, you know, I think right now it's looking a lot less likely. But, you know, you can always hope that there will be a backlash to Republicans running everything in Washington. And maybe you can at least have a check on power there. Because trying to win anything at the state Senate and the state House, really to win majorities there, that really looks like a pipe dream.
Kyle?
Yeah, and just to piggyback on that, I mean, the backlash is a very real possibility in 2018. I mean, you consider Barack Obama did so well in 2008, only to get the Republicans just dominated Democrats that next election cycle in 2010. So it's entirely possible that Democrats could come back in 2018, especially if Trump does some very unpopular things, which I don't think is outside the realm of possibility here. And Democrats got to take advantage of that. And just the general feeling that you can campaign on the ills of Governor Snyder this time. You can campaign on Flint, on the veterans' homes. You can campaign on Detroit public schools. There's a lot of things you can go, the emergency manager, all these things you can finally campaign on, and it's not overshadowed by Trump. And then you could actually instead just kind of compound the issues if Trump is completely unpopular.
To summarize, we were joking before we went to air that the loser of the day may well be Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly for 2018.
Well, Brian Kelly actually endorsed Donald Trump somewhat early on, all considering it was kind of a midnight post on Facebook. But, you know, you take what you can get. And, you know, he's a good foot soldier, a good Republican. His wife just won a seat in the state House. After that infamous Access Hollywood tape where you had Donald Trump bragging about sexually assaulting women, Brian Kelly was one of those Republicans who took a real step back. He is a conservative Christian, and he said that he was withdrawing his endorsement. A lot of the Republicans who did that came crawling back as Trump's numbers seemed to go up in the polls. Brian Kelly was not one of them. And so when he is looking at 2018, you better believe that other Republicans, especially the party apparatus, is going to be giving him quite a hard time about that.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of pressure on Bill Schuette, the attorney general. What do you think about Donald Trump? Do you condone his comments? Do you condone his actions, groping of women in crude language and so on and so forth? And it was radio silence from Bill Schuette. He got the heck away. But, you know, kept showing up at the Trump rallies. He was there in Grand Rapids in the middle of the night on Monday, Tuesday morning. I mean, he never shied away from Trump. He didn't necessarily embrace him with both arms, but he didn't run away like Kelly did. And I think that's going to endear him to Republicans in next year and the year after.
What a balance. What a tightrope walk. So many tightrope walks we've seen. I think about Paul Ryan. As Speaker of the House, and how in the world he's going to navigate a relationship with the next president.
I will say that Schuette is not quite as well positioned as he could be. He did back Jeb Bush in the primary, was a huge supporter. He's a family friend, and nobody's more establishment than Jeb Bush. He also had difficulty saying the word Trump. Go back and look at Schuette's transcripts. You're not going to see Trump maybe anywhere, even on social media. So there will be a contingency within the Republican Party that will want a real Trump guy or girl to run for office in 2018 to be the governor. So I think that's a dynamic that has not played out yet.
We've got a Lansing area guy who, from what I hear, will become the next Speaker of the House, Tom Leonard of DeWitt. You've both had a chance to observe him and get to know him. What kind of speaker will he be, Kyle?
Well, I think he's going to be a lot more conservative than Kevin Cotter. And I think he's going to be a bit more politically savvy as well. I think you're going to see somebody who is a little bit more in tune with dynamics and what plays well in certain districts. Kevin Cotter was, I think, more of a kind of a conservative by the book, a bit of an, I wouldn't say an ideologue, but I would say that politics wasn't necessarily his main interest or his strong suit, whereas I think Tom Leonard is much more of a political beast and really, I think, was kind of the political machine behind the scenes for Cotter anyway. So I don't think we're going to see a lot of change in the House. I'm going to be interested to see how he works with Democrats now, especially since Tim Grimmel, the House Minority Leader, has announced he will not seek another term as Minority Leader. So we'll see what kind of dynamics break down with those caucuses. I would hope that they are a little better. I think this past term was extremely frosty.
Susan, any thoughts on the next speaker?
I think that there are high hopes for Leonard because, you know, privately a lot of people in the lobbying corps and the business community, although they may have liked Cotter's politics, they did not think that he really knew how to maneuver the office. They did not like the Corser-Gamrat affair, how that was handled. And I think they're looking for somebody who's a bit more of a political pro. And, you know, Tom Leonard is old friends with Brian Kelly. He knows the way things work.
We touched on this earlier, but let's talk about turnout here and just get your thoughts here. Is what, if anything, can we determine about turnout last night? Is there any sign that Democrats failed to turn out?
I don't know about that. I mean, I think Democrats turned out in a good number, and we haven't seen everything, so the analysis is still yet to be written. I think the story will be that Republicans who have not voted before in quite some time, or just voters who haven't voted in quite some time, they don't necessarily have had to have been Republicans, came out and voted. And I think that's going to be the key. That's why I think the polls were off. There was a contingent of people who were so enamored by Trump's message that they finally said, you know what, I'm actually going to go vote now. And they may not have voted for years, but they came out and voted in this one. And I don't know if that makes them Republicans necessarily. That just makes them Trump supporters. And the Republicans were just the beneficiaries of that.
I take a little issue with that because, I mean, the numbers in Wayne County were definitely down for Democrats. I think it's pretty clear that African-American turnout was down if Hillary Clinton hit numbers that other Democrats had, including John Kerry, she would have carried the state.
Kyle.
And I hear what Susan's saying, and I would concur that the numbers in Wayne County were down compared to the last presidential election. But we didn't have an African-American running at the top of the ticket like you did in 2010 and 2000 or in 8
and 12.
You know, in those cases, that was something that was going to accelerate turnout. And, you know, Hillary Clinton didn't excite people in that same way. But I think that's to be expected.
Here's a question that's already come back to me many, many times. How will this crop of Michigan Republican congressmen and women, is there a Republican woman in Congress?
No,
I don't think
not
so.
Anymore.
No. Not after Candace Miller. And Republicans in similar circumstances across the country, what are your thoughts on how the Congress will work with a Trump administration?
Well, you know, we have a couple of interesting dynamics. Actually, Democrats nationally did pick up a few seats, so it wasn't this total red tide. You also have Paul Ryan, who had very public clashes with Donald Trump. He is, of course, the speaker, and there is a meeting being scheduled this week to determine what they want to do for leadership, and he has to see just how strong his support is. So that's one of the more fascinating things that is going to evolve rather quickly.
Last word, Kyle.
Well, just that the Senate is not filibuster-proof. The Democrats still have a chance to filibuster something if they don't like something. So it's not like Republicans can jam anything through that they want, but they're still going to have the run of the show for sure.
I'm not sure we'll see the filibuster for too long.
We are grateful for both of you being here on an extraordinary morning after. Susan Demas is publisher and editor of Inside Michigan Politics. Kyle Malin at MERS News. Have a great day, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank
All
you.
Thanks, Mark.
And coming up on Current State, MSU's Student Parent Resource Center offers support to MSU students who are parents so they can be successful. For Neighbors in Action, we'll talk to coordinator Kimberly Steed Page to find out more about what they do. That's coming up on Current State. We'll be right back. Current State on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. On the day after the general election, let's turn our attention to something else. The second weekend in November is coming up. That means it's time for the return of the Women in the Arts Festival in East Lansing. This is the 31st year of the festival with artists galore, lots of music. Friday night's headline show with Dar Williams is sold out, but there are plenty of other events at the festival for us to talk about. To learn more, we welcome an organizer of the Women in the Arts Festival, Abby Wattenberg. Welcome, Abby.
Good morning. Thank you.
Also with us here from the group Sometimes Why, Rachel Alexander. Good to have you with us, Rachel.
Thank you, Mark.
This is the 31st anniversary of the Women in the Arts Festival. How long have you been involved, Abby?
This is my fifth year serving on the organizing committee for the festival.
Have you had any contact involvement in the past, Rachel?
Yes, for about 30 of those
30
years.
Okay, yeah. That's a little bit of involvement. That definitely counts for something. The stated purpose of the festival is to provide a space for creative women to showcase their talents. And along with the music, there will be an artist's market with more than 50 booths. Am I right that the idea is not only to support artistic women, but local women in particular?
Absolutely. And I need to put in my plug for the artist market, as that's my role on the organizing committee.
Please do.
And really proud of the artist market that's grown over the last several years, and Rachel's nodding her head, but
yes.
It's going to be bigger and better this year.
Yeah.
We've instituted a new program called an Emerging Artists Program. So this is for women who create but haven't yet had the courage or opportunity to step out and show their work and see how it's received by others, whether or not it's going to become, you know, a hobby sort of thing or people are interested in their work. So there are lots of different ways that we're supporting these emerging artists so that they can come and show their work and see how it's received and see if it's something they want to step forward with in a different kind of way than a hobby.
Okay. Music is a big part of the festival as well. Your Friday night stage show with Dar Williams is sold out. But we should talk about Dar Williams as well, a familiar name for a lot of people, even though a lot of people may not have heard her music. Tell us about her.
I have to confess, I know her music, and I don't know a lot about Dar Williams. Do you, Abby?
She has been in Lansing several times and is a favorite of the 10-Pound Fiddle Folk Series, who is our co-producer.
Right.
As well as a favorite of the women's community here in Lansing.
Right.
She is doing a Mortal City tour, which is one of her well-known albums. And this is sort of an offshoot of this tour. It's a solo performance related to that tour.
The Dar Williams Show will open with a talk by MSU journalism instructor Amy Heimerl, author of the book Detroit Hustle, her memoir of rebuilding a rundown home in Detroit. We've talked with Amy here on Current State. Should be interesting to hear from her before Dar Williams sings.
Yes, and if I can add also, she's generously offered to do a workshop. Part of our Saturday, we just have so much going on, different ways that people can approach the arts. She's going to be holding a workshop called How a Book Gets Published, and that's at 10 o'clock at the festival. And she'll be spending an hour talking about everything folks want to know about how to get a book from manuscript to the bookstore.
Right.
We're talking with Amy Wattenberg, an organizer of the Women in the Arts Festival in East Lansing this weekend. Also, Rachel Alexander of the group Sometimes Why, playing at 1 p.m. on Saturday. Tell us about your group.
Well, actually, I'm not an actual member of Sometimes Why. Two of us. Sometimes Why is a trio, and there are two others of us who've been invited to join them for this show this weekend. We've joined them before for another show several months ago. The three women who are Sometimes Why have performed at the Women in the Arts Festival a number of times, but they've been on a 5-year hiatus until just a few months ago.
Getting the band back together.
That's exactly right. So we're very much looking forward to that.
Describe the sound, though.
Oh.
What will people hear?
Folk rock, a little bit of jazz, singer-songwriter stuff. Most of what we'll be doing is originals rather than covers of other people's music.
And the name. Sometimes why.
You know what?
Its origin.
I have been told the story, and I cannot...
Cannot divulge? Cannot,
I, no, it's that I cannot recall it.
Oh. I would imagine that those who come on Saturday can get the insider scoop on that. Yes.
I immediately went to XX and XY, you know, well, the chromosomal breakdown.
You know what? I think that may not be it, but...
But it may. Who knows?
That may not be it. Another of your music artists this year, Michaela Ann, she was a Live Music Friday guest with us last year here on Current State. Let's hear a little bit of her music. Michaela Ann singing Lift Me Up.
So lift me up so I can ramble on in my pace. Lift me up so I can say the words I gotta say. Oh, lift me up so I can sing from the top of my
Michaela Ann heard there on Current State some time ago. She performs Saturday at 4 p.m. Other music acts appearing on Saturday, Sometimes Why, the Sistrum Lansing Women's Chorus, and Pink Sunrise Project. What can you tell us about them?
I can tell you about Sistrum. I was the founding director of Sistrum and directed the chorus for its first 15 years. Starting in 1986.
It is a vocally
women's community chorus, feminist, with a feminist and social change thrust.
Message.
Yes.
Uh-huh. How many members?
At this point, maybe about 50, I'm thinking. I'm not sure. I haven't been the director for the last 15 years. They've just hired a new director, their third director. I did 15 and a half years. The next director did 15, and now she's in her first season.
That's a lot of voices.
It is.
50, that's a big sound.
Yeah. And the other thing that happened, another wonderful thing that happens at the festival is, and has for many, since well before I stopped being the director of Sistrum, is that Sistrum does what is called the Sistrum Cafe and cooks and bakes wonderful food, which is available for purchase all weekend long as a fundraiser for Sistrum. A lot of folks come and have their Friday dinner there and their lunch, Saturday lunch there.
Before we go any further, let's clarify where this is. Where does all this happen?
This happens at the Edgewood United Church, which is on Hagedorn in East Lansing.
Okay. Hagedorn and Beach.
Okay, very good. There's also a film on Saturday. She's Beautiful When She's Angry. We'll scream.
There might be some of that,
too. We'll screen at 11 a.m. What can either of you tell us about this movie?
I am looking forward to seeing it. I haven't seen it yet.
With
I know
a title like that, you have to be right.
It's a documentary well spoken of in our community, and we hope that people will come and learn a little bit about.
Is it about domestic violence? Am I remembering?
No, it's about the birth of the women's liberation movement in the late 60s and what it's turned into today.
Great.
And provocative, humorous. Mm-hmm. It should be a really good show. And if people can't make it, Goldenrod Music, which is a local
music distributor,
they have it for sale as well. So if you can't make it and would like to view it.
And Goldenrod will have a booth, good-sized booth there with much, much stuff to buy.
So much going on. Over 50 booths altogether.
Closer to 60, but
okay.
And we don't want to scare people away.
And the Edgewood United Church is the epicenter of all of this.
Yes. Okay. Lots going on.
We want to thank both of our guests who have been talking about the 31st Annual Women in the Arts Festival, Friday and Saturday, Edgewood United Church on North Hagedorn Road in East Lansing. Doors open Friday at 5, Saturday at 10 a.m. And thanks to our guests, organizer Abby Wattenberg, and from the group Sometimes Why, Rachel Alexander. Thank you and good luck this weekend.
Thank you
and
so much,
fun.
Mark.
And have fun. Have fun while you're at it. And coming up on Current State, we speak with Barb Whitney of the Lansing Art Gallery about their contribution to the Shop Small movement in an exhibition opening this week. That's coming up on Current State. Wednesday means Neighbors in Action here on WKAR's Current State. The mission of MSU's Family Resource Center is to help MSU students, staff, and faculty navigate their responsibilities at work and at school and at home. One way they provide that help is through the Student Parent Resource Center, which offers support to MSU students or parents so that they can be successful. Joining me today to tell us about what they do, Student Parent Resource Center Coordinator Kimberly Steed Page. Welcome, Kimberly.
Thank you.
Also, Lorraine Walton is an administrative assistant there. Welcome, Lorraine.
Thank you.
What are all the specific ways the SPRC supports students with children?
So specifically, one of the things that I think that we're most proud of is funding we have that we call Spartan Kids. And it's funding that allows us to support student parents that have children to offer some financial assistance for their children for daycare expenses. We know that childcare is one of the probably the number one barrier to student success at the college level because of quality affordable childcare. So we're able to offer students some financial assistance to help support daycare.
How many MSU students are parents?
So roughly we have estimates of anywhere from 10 to 20%. That's actually some of the data that we're collecting right now.
Much higher than I expected.
It's a fair number of students ranging from, you know, freshmen all the way through PhD. And I think the trend that I'm noticing is that we're seeing an increase of students coming to campus, either as transfer students or incoming new students that are coming with at least one dependent.
Lorraine, what can you tell us about Student Parents on a Mission, or do you call that SPOM?
Yes, the acronym is
SPOM. What are Student Parents on a Mission? What's the mission?
So Student Parents on a Mission is a registered student organization at MSU, and it's made up of students who are parents here through the undergrad and PhD level. And so what SPOM does is it's a support group for students. Some student parents don't feel as if they get the traditional experience here on campus. So SPOM is a way to help those students come together and have support groups for themselves and their children, and we do activities with them so that they can feel like they're having the college experience with their families.
How do you measure the effectiveness of what the group does? I mean, can you see improvements in grades, for example? How do you track that?
So, I mean, historically, that's not been something we've tracked as far as grade improvement. What we're looking for and continue to look for is that qualitative impact, you know, on students. We talk to students often who talk about if it weren't for a resource center such as ours and the support of peers who have lives like them, that it would impede their success to graduation. So we're looking at the kind of data that speaks to, are our students graduating? You know, our goal is to get students to graduation, and we're very successful, you know, in supporting students in graduation at all the levels. So really looking to, is their college experience enhanced by the student parents, only the Student Parent Resource Center, as well as the Student Parents on a Mission group? And also, is their children's experience at MSU enhanced by being a part of a group and a resource center like ours?
Can either of you talk about some of the student parents and families that you've helped over the years? I mean, do you have a family that's particularly memorable that you've helped in your mission?
I've been with this group for over 8 years, so there's a lot of families that I'm still really close to that still contact me, that we hang out outside of campus now. They're like my extended family. Mm-hmm. I mean, the kids, I've seen their kids grow up from babies, and they're now in middle school. And so our kids, I'm also a mother. And so my kids and their kids, they all get along and we hang out and we take trips together. And so there's a lot of families that stand out that are very memorable to me that I've helped over the years. And it's what this group is all about.
It's the beginning of long-term relationships, it sounds like.
It is.
Very rewarding. We're talking about the work of the Student Parent Resource Center at Michigan State University. Their job is to help MSU students who are parents succeed. We're talking with Coordinator Kimberly Steed Page. You just heard from Lorraine Walton, Administrative Assistant. We try to focus on volunteers in this segment. Does SPRC need volunteers?
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity for other students on campus to learn about a different lifestyle, you know, in the sense of this non-traditional student that we talk about in student parents. So there are lots of opportunities to volunteer through our family activities. We do monthly family activities for our student parents. There's opportunities there. We're also engaged in student advocacy. So if students have interest in learning more about policy that affects student families and learning more how to advocate at every level from the university through also local, state, and federal government, there's opportunities for that, opportunities for internships as well.
Are a lot of your volunteers fellow students?
Yes.
Or do they come from outside the student community as well?
A lot of our volunteers are MSU students on campus, and other student organizations will come and volunteer for us.
Go a little bit deeper with us, though. What kinds of things do volunteers do? What's a typical day for one of your typical volunteers?
So volunteers, typically when we have scheduled events, can help out getting to know, you know, working with the children. We offer classes, monthly kind of instructional classes for our student parents. So our volunteers can assist with, you know, childcare. They can assist with helping student parents, children in tutoring that need help, you know, particularly our international students whose children are attending elementary school in the United States for the first time often need some extra assistance in reading and, you know, other classes that student volunteers can be of assistance with.
You're doing a special program for the holidays, and WKAR, MSU Broadcasting Services, is partnering with you for your holiday Adopt a Family program. What's that about? How does it work?
Well, the holiday gift program has been around for about 10 years. And how that works is the student parents will fill out a wish list form of things that they may need. Then I match those students with departments that come forward that want to support those students for the holidays. And some of those students, the only support that they get for the holidays comes from the MSU departments. So we are very appreciative to MSU. They come out in droves. I mean, it really excites my soul to see how MSU really supports the students in this community.
Kimberly, how is your work funded?
So our home is the Division of Student Affairs and Services, and that's where kind of our financial home is too. And then we also are charged with the responsibility of, you know, looking for additional funding and grants from generous donors. We have a couple of scholarships through the Student Parents on a Mission support group. And then we also have the Christine Carter Endowment Scholarship Fund. She's a former student parent who successfully completed MSU, who started an endowment a few years ago to support student parents through scholarship opportunities.
That sounds like a successful trajectory.
Definitely.
Well done. It's been very interesting to learn about the Student Parent Resource Center at Michigan State University, helping MSU students who are parents succeed. We want to thank Kimberly Steed Page, who is the coordinator of the group. Lorraine Walton, thanks as well. You're the administrative assistant there. Good luck
to
both of you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Current state on 90.5 WKAR. For the majority of its 51 years, the Lansing Art Gallery has kicked off the holiday season with an exhibition of local Michigan artists working in a variety of mediums. Current state's Jamie Paisley spoke with the gallery's executive director, Barb Whitney, about this year's exhibit. This year's event seems to be benefiting from this revitalized era of the Shop Small movement, a project that encourages supporting local businesses during the forthcoming peak consumer holiday season.
Yes, it's exciting that buying local is back in vogue, too. We showcase Michigan artists exclusively and have done so for that whole time of the 51 years. But it's become, I would say, over the last decade, people are really getting more excited about it again and wanting to buy local, be a part of the community, support local artists, and give gifts that mean something that's a little bit different than a big box store provides. Yeah.
A lot of people, I think, there's a disconnect of, you know, if you say an art gallery, it's something that's out of my price range. There's nothing I can really do. But that's not so.
You're right. I mean, because we have things ranging from handmade soaps by Michigan artists that retail for $6 or $7 to our tiny You Are Awesome note cards on the front desk that I had to have immediately when they came in so I could tell people how awesome they were, to prints by Kimberly LaVon, who's a local artist. Her printmaking is so beautiful. Yes, various artists in various media and really a wide range of price points.
As you head to LansingArtGallery.org, there's currently about like 80 different images that are online, but that barely scratches the surface of the art that's available right now.
Yes, and you can see even just in the jewelry case, we have a tremendous grouping of Michigan artists that are doing anything from handmade silversmithing and gemstones to really beautifully crafted fine bead weaving by another local artist, Jenny Hsu, who you can see the intricacies and the work that she's providing. Or we even see now some of our jewelers that are working in mixed media using ceramics or the fiber work with the really colorful wrapped fiber on those necklaces. Mixed media is really an interesting piece where you can create a large statement necklace.
Now that's one aspect of what's available. The wearable art is I guess would be the term. Mm-hmm. But there's also more usable, and I think we're in that corner right now as well.
Right, we like the idea of the work being functional too. So you're seeing handmade ceramics, much of it wheel thrown, something that you could come and purchase one mug for a gift with hot chocolate. I'm particularly fond of some of the sets that have an olive oil bottle and a vinegar piece that I can put out on my counter. Or all year round, we have Powabic pottery here as well, which is from a Detroit-based operation that's been in operation way longer than we have, since the early 1900s, a really beautiful facility founded by a woman named Mary Chase Perry Stratton. And those are functional too in many cases, but they're decorative as well. So arts and crafts style, where part of the mission is that the work is beautiful and functional for the home. We hear a lot from folks in this area that come to visit who enjoy the gallery. We hear them talking about the uniqueness and the value that they see in handcrafted work. I think we have a resurgence both in our community, statewide, and even across the country, and this concept that having a thing that has value and someone made it with their hands is so special because it's literally unique.
If you look at the Lansing Art Gallery right now, there's a reception that's happening Friday for the holiday exhibition, but it is not, you don't have to wait that long in order to come to the Lansing Art Gallery.
That's correct. We're actually open to the public today. We'll be open 11 to 6 Tuesdays through Fridays and 11 to 3 Saturday and the first Sunday.
The Lansing Art Gallery's holiday exhibit is open right now, and its gala reception is this Friday evening, November 11th, starting at 5 o'clock. Visit the gallery located on Washington Square in downtown Lansing, right next to Costa Checks, or preview some of the exhibition online at LansingArtGallery.org. Barb Whitney, Executive Director of the Lansing Art Gallery, thanks for giving us a bit of a tour.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
For Current State, I'm Jamie Paisley.
And that's our show for today. Glad you could join us. We want to point out to our morning listeners that 90.5 WKAR will join NPR live in 34 minutes when Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton will address the nation. Once again, WKAR will air that live. We will interrupt our classical music programming for that at 10:30. Tomorrow on Current State, we'll speak with Dr. Matthew Aubin ahead of his performance with the Jackson Symphony Orchestra this weekend. It's also the second time he'll be leading the JSO since being named their music director designate. Find out how he feels that transition is going. The executive producer of Current State is Peter Wharf. Katie Cook directed the show today. Thanks also to Scott Pohl, Kevin Lavery, Jamie Paisley, Brooke Allen, and to Drew Hill, the Current State Podcast, your informative, insightful, indispensable connection with what's happening around mid-Michigan and beyond. Great conversations, great guests from politics to education and far beyond. The Current State Podcast at iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at KAR Current State. Our Facebook page is Current State from WKAR. We hope you can join us tomorrow. And you've been listening to Current State on WKAR. See you Thursday.